I'm Brian Curtis.
And I'm Wendy Ring. This is Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up. Denver, Colorado sits in a valley where air pollution can be trapped for days. Its location at the foot of the Rockies makes it prone to temperature inversions, where warm air traps cool air that's closer to the ground.
In the 1970s and 80s, that led to the city's infamous brown cloud. Since then, air quality had been steadily improving, up until about 2018, when the trend started to reverse.
Growing numbers of cars and the expansion of oil and gas wells, which emit as much pollution as the area's vehicles, led to rising levels of smog and particulates. Last year, the American Lung Association gave Denver an F for air quality.
But in the spring of 2020, when a stay-at-home order drastically decreased driving, Denverites could suddenly get a crystal clear view of the mountains and a temporary glimpse of how clean their air could be.
Pollution levels dropped 60 to 70%. But as businesses started to reopen that summer, driving rebounded, with vehicle miles surpassing pre-pandemic levels.
Not so for transit ridership, which lagged far behind, regaining less than half its former passengers.
So the Colorado Energy Office launched CanDo Colorado, a pilot project to provide 13 of Denver's low-income essential workers with e-bikes.
Christian Willis is the Energy Office's Managing Director for Transportation Fuels and Technology.
You know, essential workers were doing heroes work. So in part, this was a way to recognize that. In part, it was a way to allow them to get to work safely.
And in part, it was a trial run of providing alternatives so former transit riders wouldn't resort to driving and add to the city's pollution problem.
13 people is a pretty small trial for such a big problem.
Part of the reason it was so small was a really practical reason. There's a very formal procurement process, which can take many, many months, and we wanted something that we could launch quickly.
The way to do that was to keep the budget for bikes and cycling gear below the bureaucratic threshold.
They quickly recruited some invaluable project partners.
We brought in Northeast Transportation Connections, a community-based organization who had deep roots in the community. And then we also brought in the National Renewable Energy Lab because they had a neat app that would allow a user to track e-bike usage and then from that estimate the emissions reduction.
And they enlisted Bicycle Colorado, a statewide advocacy group. Rachel Hultin is the organization's sustainable transportation director. She's also a city council member in the Denver suburb of Wheat Ridge. She took on both roles with the passion and tenacity of a mother defending her young.
When my son was born, I was in real estate. I had this great career. And he came into my life and all of a sudden I was looking 100 years further down the road and it didn't look good. I became pretty despondent about the environmental future. I felt really overwhelmed. And then I realized the best thing I can do with this life is to give my most valuable assets, which is my passion and my time, to do everything I can to make it better. And sometimes that can feel really overwhelming because there's so much need. A friend of mine calls it the endless maw of need. When I leaned into the things I cared about the most, I recognized that I feel like I'm doing the best I can do as a human when I'm not in my car. I've quit a lucrative real estate career and went into advocacy for walking and biking because we all need to be doing everything we can to make sure we get those problems solved. And for me, that looks like people walking and people riding bikes.
There was a time when cycling in Colorado was dominated by athletes powering their analog bikes over mountain passes. E-bikes were seen as a crutch for the unfit, but those days are over.
Move over recreation, we're talking transportation. E-bikes are the biggest and fastest growing segment of the electric vehicle market.
Every time you see someone on an e-bike, you see someone who's a solution to some of our most pressing problems. And that's because e-bikes meaningfully replace car trips.
Mile for mile, e-bikes produce only 3% of the emissions from an electric car and just 1% of the emissions from a gas car, all while helping prevent those other pressing public health problems, obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. Studies show that while e-bike riders may pant and sweat less than riders of conventional bicycles, as a result, they ride longer and go further, reaping the same benefits of physical activity.
Bicycle Colorado helped the Energy Office select e-bikes that were appropriate urban transportation.
And then we said, what else do they need to be successful? Making sure they have helmets and lights and a rack and panniers so they can carry things. We provided training and support and education for the riders.
In some cases, that included mapping out safe routes to work and even riding along on the first trip.
We really wanted to set the participants up for success so that those factors didn't discourage them from really maximizing the e-bike once they got it. And then we also worked with the National Renewable Energy Lab so we could get the data on how do people's travel behaviors change when they have access to an e-bike so that we can ensure a pilot program would actually have an outcome to inform scaling it up.
The e-bikes made a huge difference in the lives of their new owners, not only as a means of affordable transportation, but as a way to improve physical and mental health during a very stressful period. Here's what some participants had to say.
My name is Darnell Robinson. I work at Sprouts Farmers Market. I work in the dairy department. I use the e-bike every day. The only days I wouldn't use it if the weather is really bad, like heavy snow. Every other day, I use the bike. And if I didn't have an e-bike, I'd most likely be paying upwards of $20 to $30 on Uber or Lyft just to get from one place to another. Yes, it saved me so much money. We're talking thousands of dollars.
My name is Frida Mitchell, and I love my e-bike. When I ride the e-bike, it makes me feel free. One with nature, and you just think positive vibe, and you see stuff that you wouldn't see when you're in the car. When it helps you pedal, it's tricking you, and you're actually getting the cardio that you need. If you guys don't believe me, get on the bike. You will lose 20 pounds. I did it. You'll love it.
Can-Do participants reported that 30% of the trips they took on their e-bikes would otherwise have been made in cars. That's huge. If everyone in the U.S. replaced 30% of their short car trips with bike trips, that would prevent 64 million metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions each year.
In addition to proving that access to e-bikes did significantly lead to fewer car trips, this little program was also a big deal because it was one of the first to measure greenhouse gas reductions from e-bike ownership.
Previous studies had looked at e-bikes in bike shares, where emission benefits are blunted and in some cases even reversed by trucks which drive the bikes around to rebalance their distribution. The first time I read those studies, I didn't know the lingo. I kept reading about rebalancing and I'm like, what, the bikes are falling over? No.
Some on this corner, some on that corner.
Yeah.
That's the one. E-bikes are cleaner and cheaper than e-cars, but they're still not inexpensive. How big could a public giveaway program realistically get?
While the Can-Do 13 were pedaling around Denver, Metro voters were considering a ballot measure to increase the sales tax by a quarter of a percent to fund local climate action. If passed, it would raise an estimated $41 million a year. Before citizens even got to vote on the climate action tax, a task force was figuring out how the money would be spent.
Why count your climate dollars before they're hatched?
To reassure Denver voters that the city had good plans in place if the fund were to pass.
Mike Salisbury is the lead on transportation energy for Denver's Office of Climate Action, Sustainability, and Resiliency.
That's an awfully long name for a department. The folks who work there just call it CASR.
What's better than if we were the Office of Climate Action, Resiliency, and Sustainability, which would be CARS? I think it's hard to go to the voters and say, hey, give us $40 million a year. We promise we're going to do a good job of being stewards of that money. And part of the task force's mission was to lay out a vision for what should we be doing. So not just like a blank check to the city to do whatever it wants, but to have some guardrails. These are the programs and projects that are really important to the Denver community. One of the recommendations that came out of the Climate Action Task Force was incentives for e-bikes.
The sales tax increase passed with close to a two-thirds majority. Mike and the folks at CASR thought e-bike incentives were a great way to get those climate investments rolling.
For reducing transportation's greenhouse gas emissions, e-bikes, which get the equivalent of 1,000 to 4,000 miles per gallon, yield the biggest bang for the buck. Dollar for dollar, an e-bike subsidy is three times more effective than an electric vehicle subsidy.
From a practical standpoint, it could be done a lot more quickly than projects involving multiple departments and agencies. The first step was to design the program.
I was trying to talk to as many people as possible. Still in COVID times, so lots of Zoom calls and Teams calls and phone calls, talking to organizations like Bicycle Colorado, other entities who had maybe done similar programs across the country or even in Canada. We did some focus groups with lower income residents to try to understand what their barriers and challenges around e-bikes might be. So really trying to get that community input. So a lot of it was just us gathering and digesting that information and trying to figure out what's going to work for us.
What they decided was that the financial help had to be up front.
Lower income residents do not have the capacity to wait for the city to reimburse them. So it really was critical that that incentive be off the purchase price of the bike. And to make that work, we had to make sure that worked for the local bike shops, and that they were going to be comfortable being the ones who were bearing that incentive amount until we could reimburse them. A lot of them are very small businesses. They don't have tons of employees and, you know, to do all this extra work. So we wanted to make it as simple and straightforward as possible, but also make sure that they were going to get reimbursed as quickly as possible on the back end. That was a big concern of theirs. Again, they might have a little more bandwidth, but they can't sit around and wait 6 to 8 weeks, for example, for the city of Denver to reimburse them for the incentives that are rolling through their shop. For that to be realistic, it felt really critical that we have a really strong relationship and know the bike shops that we're working with, that they trust us, that we trust them to be a part of the program. Also, it's really important that the bike shops have that service option. Because if something goes wrong with your e-bike, we want the resident who purchased that bike to have a place to go to get it fixed. There is a lot of challenges in the e-bike space where people will buy e-bikes online and local repair shops will not be able or will not want to fix those e-bikes that are not a brand that that bike shop sells. Lots of local bike shops will not touch an electric motor or a battery from a brand that they don't work with because they don't want to avoid the warranty and there's safety issues perhaps involved with that. But we wanted to make sure that residents, wherever they bought the bike, they could take that bike back to that bike shop and there would be local accountability. Because if you're a bike shop, the last thing you want is people bringing back bikes that aren't working because that's taking up your time to repair those bikes. So we think it's a real incentive for the bike shops to sell high quality products that they're responsible for going forward and making sure that people have the option to go get it fixed if something happens. So they're not stuck with a non-working e-bike that they just bought and it breaks after 6 months and they have nowhere to take it to fix it.
Rachel and Bicycle Colorado once again lent their expertise.
When we are looking at using e-bikes instead of cars, they need to be able to carry things. And so one of the things that was important to us was making sure cargo bikes got extra money.
Instead of buying bikes in bulk and handing them out for free like the Can-Do pilot, Denver's program let people choose their own e-bikes, providing instant rebates to cover part of the cost.
$400 for a regular e-bike or $1,200 for income-qualified applicants and an extra $500 for e-cargo bikes. That brought the cost for a low-income person down to a few hundred dollars.
People apply online and get a voucher code, which they take to a participating bike shop for a discount. When the program launched on Earth Day in April 2022, Kazer's ambitions were modest.
We're like, okay, great. If we spend $300,000 in 2022, people have gotten some e-bikes. We'll learn some good lessons. It launched on a Thursday. I still remember being in the office Monday morning. There are thousands of applications. And we're like, oh my goodness, what have we started?
That annual budget of $300,000 was gone in the first 3 days. You know that meme about building an airplane while you're flying it? Well, imagine you just took off. Thousands of people have crowded onto your plane, and you need millions of dollars to maintain altitude. In addition, other parts of the aircraft aren't functioning quite the way you thought they would. They had to come up with more money for vouchers and find a better way of distributing them. They decided to stagger distribution, issuing smaller bunches every few months instead of a whole year's worth all at one time.
Because A, we wanted to get a handle ourselves on what redemption rates looked like so we could understand, okay, we got 3,000 applications. How many of those are going to actually turn into e-bike purchases? We didn't have a great sense of that. So we wanted to slow things down and be like, okay, is that going to be 1,000 e-bikes, 2,000 e-bikes, all 3,000 applications? so we could better budget going forward. And also because talking to bike shops, there were still some supply chain issues. So rather than having all thousands of e-bikes trying to be ordered within a very short window of time, it was going to work much better if we spaced those out, so there's a little more ability for them to replenish their stocks.
They also tweaked the program to meet their equity goals, switching from a first-come, first-served system to reserving half of the vouchers for low-income residents. In the end, the e-bike program spent $5 million in 2022, over 80% of CASR's total budget for transportation.
After 9 months of operation, more than 4,700 Denverites had purchased discounted e-bikes, and a survey of recipients showed the program was working.
Together, these new e-bike owners replaced 100,000 car miles.
People were riding their e-bike 26 miles and replacing about 3.5 vehicle trips per week on average. A lot of great feedback in that survey about how people are using their e-bikes on a day-to-day basis. And it really is reassuring, like, I'm using it to get to work, I'm using it to get to school, I'm using it to, you know, run errands, all the things that they were doing in a car. That's been really exciting to, like, hear that feedback from residents and know that it's not just, oh, I bought the e-bike and I use it occasionally, but it's making a real difference in people's lives.
45% of the bikes obtained through the program were cargo bikes, and the survey confirmed the value of providing that higher rebate.
People who are using e-cargo bikes are more likely to be doing those shopping or errand trips. They're more likely to be doing that pickup or drop-off of their children. The e-cargo bike is going to replace more trips because they're just able to do more.
And they help raise the next generation of bicycle users.
A lot of people have these e-cargo bikes with a seat on the back so they can take their kids with them. And so the kids become these great e-bike enthusiasts. And the kids will, like, oh, it's, you know, time to go to daycare or school. They'll run and go get their helmet so they can, like, get on the back of the bike. And the kids will get really upset if the parents like, no, we have to drive today for X, Y, and Z reason.
Popular demand for Denver's e-bike vouchers has only increased over time. The most recent round was snapped up in just 20 minutes.
For those not lucky enough to snag a voucher, the program's market impact is still making e-bikes more accessible.
When we first launched the program, there was about 9 participating bike shops. Now we're up to about 35. So all those new bike shops have brought in new types of e-bikes. And because I think there is so much demand for lower cost e-bikes, a lot of the existing bike shops have brought in lower price point e-bikes to serve the Denver market. So we're seeing more options across a broader price range. Over the course of 2022, the average price of an e-bike sold in the program fell by about $500. There are certainly people who are still buying very high-end, very expensive e-bikes because that's what they want, but there's the option to buy at a much lower price that's sufficient to get from point A to point B.
Denver's success in reducing greenhouse gas emissions by lowering the financial barrier to e-bike ownership inspired the Colorado legislature to allocate $10 million for statewide e-bike rebates and another $2 million for continued expansion of the CANDU pilot through grants to community-based organizations. And there's more.
What we're really excited and watching right now is that our governor has proposed tax rebates for all Coloradans who want to purchase an e-bike. The number they're kicking around right now would be $800. That's when you start to see that huge scale of impact.
Not just in Colorado. California, Hawaii, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Vermont all have state rebate programs in various stages of development, and programs are under consideration in Washington, Massachusetts, Oregon, Oklahoma, New York, and Washington, D.C.
I've talked to over 40 other cities, local governments, state governments across the country who want to figure out how they can do something similar.
Ash Lovell with People for Bikes has been following their progress.
More and more are being proposed every day. People for Bikes is working on 12 e-bike incentive programs at the state level currently. We are also working to reintroduce the e-bike act at the federal level, which would be a federal e-bike incentive. In terms of municipal incentives, I can think of at least 8 off the top of my head that are currently running, and I think there's more.
You and I. Thank you.
We've heard how much people love their e-bikes. Rachel says it's like any relationship. There's a honeymoon period of excitement and euphoria, followed by the sober realization that it's not all unicorns and rainbows.
As you're getting more, as we like to say, butts on e-bikes, you're also getting more e-bikes on the roads where we don't have enough protected bike lanes. We don't have a connected bike infrastructure. And e-bikes are also bringing more people onto bikes that weren't on bikes before. More women, more seniors are riding e-bikes. We're also seeing e-bike usage from middle schoolers who can't drive yet and are finding e-bikes are giving them more access to like enrichment in their communities and activities they want to do. So it's not only increasing the number of people on bikes, but it's also disproportionately shifting how many people who are riding bikes are actually more inexperienced and more vulnerable than we've seen before.
One third of the people who got e-bikes in Denver fit into that category. And this democratization of e-bike ownership is creating a broader political base of folks calling for safer streets than the traditional advocates who were mostly mammals, middle-aged men in Lycra.
It is absolutely elevating the grassroots advocacy, calling for more investments and prioritizing safe places for people to ride bikes. Just yesterday, I got an email from somebody who was really excited. They got their e-bike and they're using it to get to work every day. And they've had 3 accidents in the last year. And they're asking us, what are we doing to make sure it's safer for that person to continue using their e-bike instead of their car to get to work? It's a great question. I wish it was a switch we could flip instead of a dial we turn to increase safety. But there are more and more people who are asking their elected officials to focus on making it safer.
So how safe are Denver streets for cyclists?
When it comes to bike infrastructure, Ash says slightly better than middle of the road.
We have a program at People for Bikes called City Ratings that will look at your city. And it doesn't have to be a city. It can be a, you know, small town, municipality. We have data for everybody that will show you your city's rating out of 100 in terms of your bicycling infrastructure. If there isn't good infrastructure, the chances of having an accident are much higher. Denver is a 42 out of 100. The average score for cities in the U.S. was a 37 for comparison. So not bad, but not as good as it could be. What we've seen in Denver is that we were already a very active and outdoorsy group of people that live in Denver. I'm making huge generalizations here. But there's been support for bicycling infrastructure. There's great infrastructure in wealthier areas and less great infrastructure in areas that are less well off. So connecting those pieces so that the people who got the e-bikes, for example, as part of the Can-Do Colorado program can safely ride them from where they live to where they work. I think that's Denver's next really important piece. This e-bike incentive program, because it's not just focused on getting e-bikes into the hands of everyone, but really does have a strong component for low-income folks. We're starting to have those conversations and we're seeing a lot of enthusiasm around building infrastructure in those places that really need it now.
Colorado's e-bike program is just one aspect of a revolutionary change in how state transportation funds are allocated.
Last year, we adopted the greenhouse gas rule, a statewide policy that mandates our transportation investments are actually measurably reducing greenhouse gas emissions from transportation. The way we spend our transportation dollars has to translate to greenhouse gas emission reduction, and that has to translate to reduction in car travel. So it's a really exciting time in Colorado because we actually have a blunt tool to make sure that our transportation agencies at the state level and in our largest metropolitan areas are shifting their transportation priorities away from cars and making sure that those transportation dollars, which are our transportation dollars, are being spent on greenhouse gas reducing strategies. And just to give you a metric of success, the Denver Regional Council of Governments, they control the lion's share of funding in the Denver metro area that goes towards infrastructure. And about every 4 years, they attach dollars to projects. And last year, because of the greenhouse gas rule, they gave out over $260 million worth of project dollars, and not $1 was for a road expansion project. all of those projects really emphasized capacity through active transportation, like walking and biking in transit. One of the things I like to say is the e-bike is an indicator species of a healthy transportation system. If it's working for e-bikes, it's working for everybody.
COVID took a huge toll, but it did incite some healthy changes that will help us get our butts out of cars.
In the transportation world, it was wonderfully disruptive. At the individual and community level, our behaviors changed. We're doing a lot more shorter trips, driving an equivalent number of miles. They're popping around their neighborhoods, their local communities more. So the average trip length has shortened, but they're taking more of them. So to me, that is just a gigantic invitation to substitute those short trips with bike trips.
So the next time you find yourself wondering, as Brian and I often do, if what you're doing even matters, remember the Can-Do Mini Pilot and the 13 essential workers who were, you could say, the training wheels for the biggest e-bike program in the country. The actions of a small group of people can leverage a large amount of change, and some of the most powerful levers are stories.
Data is important. We need to get this right. But sometimes the humanity gets lost in those big numbers.
Stories about people can be more powerful than statistics at giving policymakers the courage to enact the bold transformational change that we need. And small endeavors like the Can-Do Mini Pilot create the personal relationships where those stories can be told and heard.
You know, sometimes the work that we do is at such a high level. We've got this really aggressive goal to increase the number of electric vehicles in Colorado. But, you know, those are really just numbers. We rarely, if ever, get to see how our policies affect an individual driver. And in this case, we got to see firsthand how providing somebody with an electric bike really changed their lives, whether it was allowing them a more consistent and dependable way to get to work, whether it was a trip that rather than taking an hour and a half now takes 30 minutes, whether it was giving them a way to exercise. It really made a difference in the lives of individuals. That's just something we don't always see in our work. Of all of the work that I've done over the years, all of the programs that I've launched, all the programs that we've managed, there has been by far and away more interest in this program than any other program.
I'm so happy that I was one of 13 that got to do the pilot. And you know, now I have bragging rights because now there'll be other people that will get the bike, and I was one of the people that started the program.
You've been listening to Cool Solutions, stories of climate action from the bottom up.
Thanks to Christian Willis, Rachel Hultin, Frida Mitchell, Darnell Robinson, Mike Salisbury, and Ash Lovell.
And to Dan Bowden, Scott Holmes, Jason Shaw, and B-Side for our music.